Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score! Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago sports talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
What I've seen from Michael Kopech this year that I like is that he is pitching in the strike zone. He's not throwing 110 miles an hour. We talked to Coop years ago, and he would talk about, we got a guy that wants to throw the ball through a wall. It was like Kopech wanted to take a running start and just see if he could get to like 110 or something. And instead, he's become more of a pitcher. And in fact, it's the late action on his pitch that is so devastating. I don't think it's just the velocity. And he's not hitting 100 miles an hour. And in that start, by the fifth inning, I think he threw a 91 mile an hour fastball. That kind of scares me. Even Tony La Russa talked about Adam Wainwright in the postgame because it's what you've seen. For me, it's Chris Sale because I've seen that, and he's a hard-throwing guy. But Burley started out in the bullpen and then became a starter. And, I mean, they're totally different style pitchers, but I worry that we're trying to fit this guy into some kind of cautionary tale. I would like them to take their time and unleash him when it matters most.
With due respect to his career, and he ended up having a pretty solid career, I don't think that any young right-hander wants to be compared to Kerry Wood in Chicago. Because to me, when you look at Kerry Wood, as popular as he was, he somewhat is the symbol of unfulfilled potential. It doesn't seem that long ago that Kerry Wood was the guy that you had similar type of hopes for that you do for Michael Kopech. And here's why it doesn't bother me to the extent that I think that it did initially. I think that if they use it as a cautionary tale, then that's okay. Because if that example makes you more intelligent in how you use Michael Kopech, then I think it's a good example to invoke right now.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Oh my goodness, baseball, baseball, baseball. Cubs couldn't get a hit, and the Sox had couldn't take advantage of five errors by Detroit. Both teams lose. Oh, David, come on. We need a good baseball fix. What is this?
Morning, Molly. Happy Wednesday. It wasn't a happy Tuesday. Gosh, that was hard to watch. Yeah, the White Sox, they were basically handed the game and decided to, you know, refuse no thank you. The Tigers kicked the ball around like a little league team, and the Cubs couldn't hit again. And we are back in the same sort of narrative. They are struggling right now, and it hasn't been the same since they exploded for 15 runs last Friday. Familiar territory. And then, you know what, if you wanted to cheer up and turn on some hockey like I tried, forget that. My God, that was ugly.
Yeah, not a good night all the way around for the fine sports fans of Chicago. The Blackhawks lost 7-4, as you mentioned. They were already eliminated effectively, but now they're what are they, 7 points? That, now the question is whether they could catch Dallas for some sort of moral victory by the end of the season that doesn't matter and won't matter. So there's no need to obsess with that. The real problem here, the underlying problem, are niggy-naggy injuries slash health concerns on both sides of town. And I think it's pretty frightening from the Cubs' perspective. You've got to give Chris Bryant the week off, apparently, because of a biceps injury. Oh. It doesn't affect him at the plate, but it's difficult for him to throw. So you figure that one out. That is the guy who makes things happen on offense at this point, and he has to sit out. Javi's still out with his hamstring. And then on the south side of town, Louis Robert, of all people, is unfortunately down with flu-like symptoms and is on the abundance of caution list. With these flu-like symptoms, which is a 10-day DL, but could be earlier if he tests negative a couple times. So
the baseball news was discouraging enough to make you want to reread Ryan Pace's press conference transcript just to cheer up or for a laugh. You know, that's how that's how tough things were last night. You know, the Chris Bryant thing is unfortunate because it's odd the way it was described, and it makes you long for the DH in the National League because right. I think he could probably take at bats, but he's so versatile and valuable in the field that moving him around, you can't move him around. That's tough, and you wonder how chronic it'll become. So bad timing because they need his bat. They need his bat on good days. When they struggle, they need it even more the way he's hitting. And Luis Robert, just this White Sox – The headlines continue to be, you know, health related every couple of days. You're like, when is this going to stop?
Yeah, it's really disappointing, frankly, as a Sox fan. It's just upsetting. I mean, I got buddies of mine are just, you know, tuning into the game and find out then that there's, hey, where's Robert? I mean, it's you're just so used to him not just patrolling the outfield, but you know, again, I told you my T-shirt idea would be. It would be every position with his name on it, including catcher, pitcher. He's just – because he's everywhere. Get it? No? He's the player that's everywhere?
It's good. I get
and
it.
You want to ruin my T-shirt by turning it into just the outfield, which I think outfield. Is far too subtle. You need to hit people over the head with it.
And he was just starting to hit, too. I mean, he was beginning to do everything in the way that you expected him at the beginning of the season, and that's why it's unfortunate. You hope it's not long that this lasts. But it was, you know, on a day when you thought, okay, the Tigers are coming to town, here comes the sweep, the good news continues, and it was a pretty tough day for the Sox overall.
There's a part of me that blames you. And
I know.
I hope you're not offended by it, but you did bring up the sweep thing, and I was like, "What you do? Shh! Yeah. Don't put."
I wanted to get in front of that. I knew that you were holding me responsible, so I just wanted to kind of get, you know, remove, get that out in the open, clear the air. It's my fault. I'll own it. I'm not Ryan Pace. I'm going to own my responsibility.
Boy.
It's on me.
Ryan Pace. That was a curious one. Ryan Pace began. With an apology. I mean, this was what was more predictable in the world of sports than Ryan Pace beginning his little Zoom conference by telling everyone that he wasn't going to answer their questions.
I hope you guys understand we can't get into the details. I'm sorry in advance for any questions I can't answer, but I promise I'll do my best.
Thing is, that could have been from like last year or 2 years ago or 3 years ago. He's been here long enough to open up, you know, every pre-draft press conference in the same way. It just happened to be yesterday when, you know, in 20 minutes, it was the working definition and the latest of perfunctory. You know, he had to do it, so he did
exactly.
It, and we got in and out. And that was pretty much it. He did not reveal much. He said a couple things we will get into later, but there wasn't much in the way of real information.
David, do you suspect, as I do, that when Jeff Joniak talks to him on a weekly basis, that is the only time we hear from him during the season, for the most part, he'll do a little hit with Jeff. I'm guessing that he apologizes to Jeff. They just cut it out for time constraints. That he begins every one of those little 3-minute sit downs with an apology that he can't answer any questions.
I'm sorry, Jeff. It's great to see you. Thanks for bringing lunch again. But I'm not going to be able to answer anything.
Is that your first Ryan Pace impersonation?
No,
I don't remember you doing it very often.
No, you challenge me. You inspire me. And it's not even close to as good as yours. So,
I've got a
Pace impression.
I told you, my Pace impersonation is actually my Joe Bernadine impersonation. I took the old Cardinal and not the baseball player nor the football player, the actual Cardinal of the Archdiocese of Chicago. And I just used that same voice I used for Joe Bernadine when I was doing my Joe Bernadine impersonation.
The only Cardinal in Chicago that's beloved.
Probably. Although, if you don't love Fitz, there's something wrong with you. I'm not talking about Coach Fitz, though there's something wrong with you. You don't love him. But Larry Fitzgerald is one of my favorite NFL players ever. I love that guy. What a great player.
What a great player. And nice segue. We do have the other Fitzgerald, I guess, Patrick, right, today?
Yeah.
What 8 o'clock. Looking forward to Fitz. Go Cats.
Go Cats and go Cats in the draft. I mean,
yes.
You know, there are going to be at least 4 guys that will be drafted, I would think, before all is said and done. Perhaps 2 in the first round, perhaps 2 pretty early in the first round. And I think you look at the group of players that they have. I mean, it just tells you how good the program has become to see that many guys. 2 first-round picks from Northwestern, fairly high first-round picks, too. And I think they've done, you know, Fitz does a great job, but they've, you know, these are players that develop before our eyes as well. I mean, I understand that, you know, one guy sat out with COVID issues, opted out last year, but the cornerback developed before our eyes, didn't he? I mean, that's great coaching.
Greg Newsome is definitely a guy who you look at with first-round potential. And Northwestern has gotten so much talent that I've kidded Fitz in the past. Is like, you keep getting this kind of talent, you're going to kill the narrative that you do more with less. Because these aren't necessarily overachievers. These are guys that are elite blue-chip prospects that are developing at Northwestern, becoming first-round draft picks. And, you know, the Bears – are unlikely to be in a position to draft Rashawn Slater because he's going to be a guy that goes higher as a left tackle and an offensive lineman. But Greg Newsome could be there, Mully. And it leads us to the other big development in the draft yesterday, some of the medicals, which we talked about. You referenced this, and it's a really great point to remember how much information is missing. The travails of Caleb Farley. Remember that name, the Virginia Tech cornerback, we'll get to later. But, boy, his injury history is starting to get a lot more attention, and you'd wonder what that's going to do to his status because he's a mid to 20-ish first-round prospect.
Right.
Could he drop because of the injuries and the history that a lot of people wonder about?
Yeah, I think there are players like that in this draft. I think that we are lacking much of that information. I think to a certain extent – the teams are lacking some of that information. It's going to be really interesting to see how teams go about their selections when, you know, the biggest danger you can have in an NFL draft is trying to create a player. If you have a need at a different position and you're looking at guys and you're breaking down tape, David, for a lot of these guys, you're breaking down tape. Not the majority, but for a lot of different players, you're breaking down tape from 2 years ago. You're breaking down 2019 tape effectively to try to figure out what a player is, and you don't have the latest kind of information on how they develop as a player. I mean, there are guys that did not play in 2020 who are going to be high picks, and I'm talking about, you know, the first half of the draft. There's 3 or 4 guys that will be taken that did not play, and you're projecting how much improvement they might have had or what they looked like, or, you know, it's hard to figure out if you've got an offensive tackle, how a guy's footwork, how a guy's kind of technique would have developed because he didn't play, and how you project that because a missing season when you're 21 years old is huge.
Mully, the most intriguing player in this NFL draft that will begin tomorrow. The countdown begins. It's a lot of fun to count it down, isn't it? So the most intriguing player, Trey Lance, played one game last year against Central Arkansas, and he was 15 out of 30 for 149 yards, two touchdowns, one interception. Before that, he played 16 games in 2019, to your point. So the guy who's going to dictate the course of how many executives' careers on Thursday night, coaches, teammates, Trey Lance played in one football game last year against Central Arkansas. That there's so much mystery surrounding what he can do, what he's capable of, and so much of this is, you know, it's science, but it's still art, and it's a bunch of people making educated guesses at the potential of young football players.
Where did Scottie Pippen go to college? Was he Central Arkansas product? He went to some kind of school in Arkansas, right? Because I remember talking to him about he thought at one point about transferring to Arkansas. You know, in those days
it was Central Arkansas. Yeah, he was a standout for the University of Central Arkansas. I don't know if they had a football team back then. I don't know much about their football program.
I'm not sure they had a basketball team, David. Scotty kind of came out of nowhere is the point. But
they had Scotty four guys they pulled out of chemistry class.
I mean, exactly. There you go. Scotty was a 6 foot point guard or 6'1" point guard when he started college, maybe 6'2", and then he kind of grew a little bit and became a basketball Hall of Famer. A good guy to have drafted. They didn't draft him. They traded for him on draft day, but let's not get caught up in semantics. I think this draft is going to be fascinating for the aforementioned reasons. I think that you got to remember this is still a draft where you're filling in holes and you haven't been able to meet with these guys and get to know their automobile in the parking lot of the restaurant, etc., and really identify them with them in that fashion. But there are stories of such matters that are all over the place.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that works out.
You haven't been able to fall in love with the kind of car a quarterback drives or to snub a quarterback at dinner. You haven't had a lot of opportunities to do either one.
Yeah, it saved you the indignity of canceling dinner or not going to dinner with a player that is going to be better than the guy you drafted. I got that. That's pretty good. All right, we got to get to the 5 at 5. We'll bring in our executive producer Dustin Rhodes, and we'll kick it around. So many great stories, negative stories, sadly, from last night. But in the wide world of sports, we'll get to all of it next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
What had more to do with the White Sox's loss to the bumbling Tigers, Tony La Russa's decision to stick with Lucas Giolito too long in the seventh, or the Sox's inability to hit with runners in scoring position?
Listen, that was one of the most frustrating losses of the season. And I think we've talked about this before. Dave Van Dyke, the old Sun Times, I believe he worked at the Tribune too, baseball writer, Dave used to say that he would write down certain games because they're games you should have won. And you get to the end of the year and you start compiling those. And he would. He would have like a little place in his notebook where he would keep track of all the games that you should have won that you ended up losing. And I got to tell you something. Okay, I get it. You know, they needed to hit. But let me ask you this, and I mean this sincerely. With all the experience that Tony La Russa brings to the job, with all of the talk there has been about the great White Sox bullpen, are they ever going to win a 2-1 game? Are they ever going to actually come out and win a close game? They had that game. They were up 2-1. Lucas Giolito is brought out, has a rough at bat. He walks a guy, has another, 8-9 pitch at bat, gets an out. He's now getting over 100 pitches. What are you doing? What are you doing? Can't you get him out of that game when you see that he's struggling a little bit and that he's working hard? Next thing you know, boom, there's a double in the gap. The game is tied. Next thing you know, they're taking the lead. Why can't the White Sox win a game 2-1? Is that something that you no longer are allowed to do in baseball? I mean, they should have scored 7 runs the way that team was kicking the ball around. They hit into at least 4 double plays early in the game. It seemed like every time there was an error that was followed up by a ground ball and a double play, which was hugely frustrating. But I don't think you are banned in baseball from winning a close game. Lucas Giolito had a bounce-back game. He gave you 6 excellent innings, and you just needed more from him? Because what? Your bullpen wasn't off the day before? Because maybe you're going to need your bullpen 2 days from now? What the hell's going on? Why can't they win a close game? It drives me crazy, so I'm going to go with the decision to stick with Lucas Giolito too long in the 7th. No doubt about it, they should have scored a lot more runs, but they didn't. And so you got to manage that game like it's a 2-1 game you're supposed to win.
I'm going the same way because, to some degree, going 0-13 with runners in scoring position, that's baseball. That happens. That happens to teams that can score runs. That happens to teams that can't. But this idea that you have your ace on the mound and you have a lead against the lowly Tigers who, you know, could not catch the ball, kicked it around a couple times, 5 errors, unbelievable opportunities. Yeah, the White Sox squandered them offensively, but you still, Lucas Giolito had a lead late in the game. You have the best bullpen in baseball that everybody knows that the White Sox consider themselves to have the best bullpen in baseball, and you do not use it. You don't use it when your starter is clearly laboring. Now, you know, we talk about the impact of a manager, and when Tony La Russa was hired and when Joe Maddon was hired back with the Cubs, you know, five years ago, all these things, 6 years ago, how many games does a manager, you know, make a difference? How many games can a manager win in the course of a season? How many games can a manager lose? Because, Mully, this idea that the Dave Van Dyke example is a good one, but you referenced it before because it's come up before. This is already, we're near the end of April, and we've had a couple incidents here where the decisions made by Tony La Russa, Hall of Famer, due respect, but they've been curious at best. That's being kind. So you've got your ace on the mound, and he walks a guy. And so he gets an out, but he clearly is struggling, so he gives up a double, and the game is tied. All of a sudden, it's 2-2. You go to the mound, and you think, okay, all right, here we go. He can see what everyone else can see watching, and he leaves him in. Leaves him in. Who saw that coming? I mean, you did not have to be Ruby to read a tarot card to see this one coming. This was obvious to everybody who was watching. And so even Lucas Giolito post-game, unusually kind of short and not as introspective and not as open, he said he was tired. And it's Tony La Russa's job and Ethan Katz's job to figure that out and to anticipate that. On his 107th pitch, his velocity was 92. Okay, if you can learn that in the press box, you should know that in the dugout. That was a bigger deal. That was a bigger problem. Yeah, 0-13 hurts, but when you have situations and mistakes that feel self-inflicted, those hurt more.
These are both really good options to answer the question because they're both hugely part of why the Sox lost. And Mully, the analogy you gave at the beginning, talking about Van Dyke, and this is one of those that'll sting if it doesn't go the way you hope. But even when they did go to the bullpen, like, who did they go to? I mean, it was almost like they genuflected and they got out of the way and said, okay, you guys get this one. When you finally did go to the bullpen, you didn't go to the right guys. You went to guys that shouldn't be in there unless it's a mop-up duty, in my opinion. But you got to be able to score more runs. I agree with you, Mully. 2-1 games should be something the teams can win. But it just seems like in today's baseball, didn't we put a magic number on it, like 4? Like, you got to score four runs to win a baseball game nowadays. Four. And so when you go that bad with runners in scoring position and leave nine guys on base, and to the point you guys made, don't take advantage of the fact that the Tigers had five errors. I mean, when you have five errors, that usually means five runs or six runs. I think, Mully, did you say seven, right? Did you say they should have scored seven runs in the game, right? So,
Dustin, they also – there was a play where your mean Mercedes hits a screeching ground ball, so he can't field that, right? The ball's knocked down, and then the guy sails the ball into the camera well. And that's not an error because it's an infield hit, basically.
Right.
I'm telling you, they had more than that many errors. They were kicking that ball around. They were committing an error, an inning, and it was just like, how can you not take advantage of that? They were begging you to score.
Right, and maybe we're still trying to figure out how are Ethan Katz and Tony La Russa working together. Ethan Katz was brought here as this big sabermetrics guy, right? He's the metrics guy. He's the guru. So maybe they're still trying to figure out who's making the call, when to make the call. They're feeling each other out. And unfortunately, I never thought Lucas Giolito was going to throw 100 pitches. When we talked about Lucas Giolito during this segment yesterday, if you would have said the over-under on Lucas Giolito pitches, I'd have put it at about like an 80 pitch count, about 80, nowhere near 100. I think that's just way too much for a guy who had an issue with a finger.
It's April 28th. How many times has he thrown 100 pitches in his start so far? I mean, these Sox starters are piling up the pitches, and not to go all, you know, that's just convenient maybe to look at now, but it seems as if they're really trying to get a lot out of these guys and riding them like it's later in the season than it is.
Those are tough questions to answer because it's like, what do I say to that?
Chris Bryant is out of the Cubs lineup with a biceps injury that will reportedly keep him out as long as a week. Is Bryant the player the Cubs can least afford to lose at this point? If not him, then whom?
Oh, he's definitely the player they can least afford to lose. I mean, he's been their best hitter. He's a guy who's had a resurgent start to the season. He's played how many different positions? He gives you lineup flexibility. He is everything that, you know, Chris Bryant has been since he came up, with the exception of the last season when he was really – it was a really struggle for 60 games. But Chris Bryant was off to a very good start, kind of unexpected. You thought that this was something that you didn't see coming. His right biceps that apparently, because it was cold last week at Wrigley, he aggravated this against the Mets when it dipped into the 30s. And that's about the same time he was, you know, used a couple times in the outfield. So this is when you wish the National League had a designated hitter. You hope that they, you can say these things like out of reflex. You hope they can overcome the loss of him in the lineup. They're not going to overcome the loss of Chris Bryant in the lineup. They can't hit. He's the only guy, one of the few guys that has been hitting lately. Okay, Contreras has a lot of home runs. Anthony Rizzo has been hot. But where are these hits in the last few games? They have a lineup that needs his bat in it. I hope this isn't too long. They're already now without Bryant and Baez with the hammy. This has not been a good couple days after you thought maybe, just maybe, that 15-run explosion was the sign of better things to come. Instead, nothing really good has happened since.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, it's an excellent point, David. You know, Chris Bryant is the offense. I mean, he's the guy that's put up power numbers and as you say, gives you flexibility in the lineup. I had a bad feeling when I saw him out. I didn't know that meant no one else could hit. I didn't know that meant, you know, we're only allowed two hits now, so figure out where it goes to. And Jay, hey, why don't you have a walk just so everything looks like we had runners on base? That was a disastrous offensive performance from the Cubs. And I wonder about Chris Bryant being the player they can least afford to lose. I wonder about it because I think you've got third base covered, if you want it covered. I'm not saying that it's a player as good as him, but you get cover there, and you've got cover in left field, even with Jock Peterson out too. I'm going to say Jake Arrieta might be the player they can least afford to lose at this point in the season. He's kind of become their stopper. he's become the guy that gives you the best pitching performance. Dustin said that he's become the ace. I don't know that I agree with him as the ace. I still think that when it's all said and done, that Kyle Hendricks will end up being the ace of this staff. But I don't know that you have any kind of depth in your pitching staff. I don't know that you'd feel good. You know, we're already talking about moving guys out and you know, Zach Davies. And do you put Alec Mills in there? Do you switch them around? So if you had two positions like that, I mean, look, I also wonder about, you know, just what Anthony Rizzo means to the team, like his presence. If you lose him, what do you lose in terms of, you know, just the kind of overall guy that's kind of running around and chatting with people and playing well enough, Gold Glove first baseman. But I mean, I understand that Chris Bryant is definitely in that conversation, and he's had a really nice start to the season, and you want him out there, and it's tough to see a guy that is hitting as well as he is not able to play because his throwing arm is bad. That is very disappointing. But I do wonder if he is the guy that they can least afford to lose.
Well, just to piggyback on your answer there a little bit before we get to the heart of the matter, if Kyle Hendricks is indeed the ace, Mully, tonight's a really good night to show it. The Cubs could really use a 2-1 win in Atlanta tonight and 100 pitches from Kyle Hendricks. Like, get it to the eighth, and maybe we get another 5-out save or something like that. An unusual 5-out save and a 2-1 win by the Cubs. Because, listen, at this point, Chris Bryant's the only guy who has been hitting for the Cubs. And him out of the lineup and Baez out of the lineup. And again, right, Baez, I've been all over Baez, but at least every once in a while, he might put one into Augusta, Georgia if he connects on one. That's how hard he swings, just to steal a line from JD, some other direction of Georgia, some other city in Georgia if he connects. So it was really disappointing last night. I was glued to that game and was checking in on Giolito, but it just Trevor Williams was having a really good game. Trevor Williams had, I don't know exactly the metrics of it. I don't study it the way others do on this station, but to me that was a quality start. That was a quality start by Trevor Williams. He put them in a position to win that game. Now, I'm not a big fan of throwing to Acuna ever, and he broke the tie. It was a scoreless game going into the fifth inning. But same thing, you can't win a game with four hits or whatever the Cubs had last night. You just can't. So two whole hits. I mean, that's ridiculous. So yeah, you can't afford to lose Chris Bryant. Period. And you cannot. And David, you made the great point. I mean, in the beginning of the show about the fact that, boy, the Cubs wish they had the DH right now because Bryant could at least potentially do that for them.
Too. I mean, I know he's done nothing, but I'm just saying, when you look at the entirety of their lineup, he's their Schwarber. No Schwarber.
You know, I'm glad you asked that question.
What is your reaction to our guy Brad Biggs predicting a huge trade-up in his latest mock draft that would see the Bears pick fourth and take Trey Lance? Are you on board with that move? What would it cost?
Well, it would cost more than they have, so I'm not on board with that move. The cost of doing that would be overwhelming. I mean, I would imagine, you know, you got to start with your next three first-round picks, including this year's, right? So you give up 20, you give up next year's first-rounder, you give up another first-rounder the year after that, and then you would have to sweeten that deal with maybe one or two picks or a player. I don't know. I think that when you think about what it would cost to move up in the draft to number four, it's ridiculous. And there are other teams that are chasing a quarterback too. So, you know, I was a little bit flabbergasted by that when I saw it, because Biggsy is the man. He's the man on the beat, and he's the guy talking to people. I know how hard he works, and I know a lot of the same people he's talking to. And I understand that the Bears want to move up. And then watching Ryan Pace and hearing the whole consensus thing, it occurred to me that when you start talking about Russell Wilson, that package to get a player of his accomplishment is understandable. the package that you're talking about for a player who is utterly unknown is just shocking to me, because I think if indeed Jimmy Garoppolo is on the trading block, then I think that's a clue that the Niners are taking Mac Jones because they need somebody that would step in and start immediately. So I think when you start adding all these things up, you're looking at probably Trey Lance at number four, which, you know, David talked about the uncertainty with that player. I really like Justin Fields. I don't know what's going on with him. He seems to be slipping, and by that, I mean, I don't know, maybe still top 10, maybe gone before 12. We'll have to wait and see. But New England is a dangerous team. Unless they trade for Garoppolo, they could be a team that's moving up, and they've got a lot of firepower. I just think the cost is so exorbitant that it is almost cost prohibitive. I can't imagine giving all of that up. But again, if you're a consensus builder and you got everybody in your hip pocket because you're giving them a voice, I guess that means your bosses will approve whatever the heck you want to do. I would say be careful, and that scared me.
Well, it should. And I think Brad's being consistent. He has for weeks been saying that the Bears, if they want to get their quarterback, they need to move up and make a deal to get their quarterback. So I think this is an extension of that. I think there's a lot of people that aren't sure what's going to happen with that number four pick. And this just reflects what the Bears, you know, may want to do in their heart of hearts. But I think that their head has to prevail here. They've got to listen to reason and logic, because as you point out, okay, let's just go through this. You're going to give up the number 20 pick to move up, obviously. Then is it going to take a 2022 first round pick and a third round pick, and then probably one in 2023? So essentially, the Russell Wilson package, which I think is just shy of maybe a fifth rounder in there, but the Russell Wilson package is something you're going to give up to move up to draft a quarterback from North Dakota State that hasn't taken hasn't played in more than one game since 2019 against competition that I think you is fair to wonder. And Trey Lance may end up being a star, and you may look back at this conversation and laugh one day. And maybe some people, the day Patrick Mahomes was drafted, question his credentials. I don't think so, not to this degree. But be very cautious. And I just think that it just underscores the absurdity of how much, if you give up that kind of capital to move up for to draft potential, I just think that you haven't learned a lesson. You haven't learned a thing, and you probably shouldn't be doing the job. So I almost think that this is the worst case scenario for the Bears, even though some people will love it. And frankly, some people will look at this and say, you know what? I wonder if this is going to happen, because the most plugged in Bears reporter, the most respected guy on that beat, is saying that this is conceivable and it could happen. He's not making this up. He's hearing that this is one of a range of possibilities that could happen on draft night, when the only thing that we have learned is to expect the unexpected. This would be somewhat unexpected, and I also think it would be very unwise.
The radio producer in me says, absolutely, pull the trigger, go for it. It would be so great for our day-to-day business watching Matt Nagy try to get everything he can out of, because if you do this, he's got to start. He's got to start from day one. This is not sit on the bench and watch Andy Dalton and hang out in a real nice quarterback room. That's not what you're doing here. If you move up, this guy has to be the guy from day one, no doubt about it. But the fan in me says, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. Absolutely, it's too much. It's been a long time. How long has it been since we had a first-round pick as a Bears fan? When's the last time you had a first-round pick? Because you gave them all away to get Khalil Mack. So, no. Mm-mm. It's too much. But to your guys' point, like, Biggs isn't making this up. This would be more something that I was trying to propose and make up and create a smokescreen or something. But I do think, in my opinion, I think he could be the second best prospect depending on what team he ends up on. I really do. I think there's short-term success versus long-term success. What might be scaring some people off is Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz was at that school a few years before this, and that hasn't worked out exactly. He also, David, you've made the point, he hasn't taken a ton of snaps, hasn't played a lot of games.
And that, that's the biggest concern.
You know, and who has he taken those snaps against, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll debate you on the Wentz thing because I don't think they're related necessarily, but I do think the limited playing time is something that is a valid point of concern.
I hope you guys understand we can't get into the details. I'm sorry in advance for any questions I can't answer, but I promise I'll do my best.
Did Ryan Pace coin a new Bears draft motto with the use of the word consensus in yesterday's Zoom conference?
You know when there's kind of a consensus pick and you can feel it.
Is that part of, quote, the right football culture that all teams need to strive for, as President Ted Phillips described the Bears at the end of the season? Does the league need more executives that strive to abdicate responsibility?
That's just mean, man. That's just mean. So... I don't necessarily want my general manager being a consensus builder. You know, I want him to be smarter than any other evaluator in the room, and I want him to be feeling like he's a sense of conviction when you trade for a player, when you draft a player, when you sign a player. I want him to be somebody that follows his own instincts and uses his own intelligence to arrive at a conclusion. Consensus building is corporate speak, and to me, again, playing amateur psychologist as we do on a regular basis here, I wondered if yesterday, the more we heard about this consensus building, entering a draft full of unknowns, frankly, a draft that I'm not sure that somebody who has presided over six seasons without getting to winning a playoff game should be entitled to preside over. I wondered if Ryan Pace was trying to say things that he thought his bosses wanted to hear, and if he was saying things because he was so affected by what happened the last time he was in a situation like this, 2017. He wasn't building much of a consensus in 2017. He wasn't worried about it. He was keeping things to himself. He was doing exactly what I described earlier. The one thing I respected about Ryan Pace the night he drafted Mitch Trubisky was that he was convicted on what he wanted. He was fixated on a position and, unfortunately, the wrong player. But he did go down that lane without hesitation, and it was his choice. So much that he did not even share it with his football coach. There was no consensus that night between Ryan Pace and John Fox and company. Nobody in the building outside of Ryan Pace knew exactly how badly he wanted to draft Mitch Trubisky. That's what you want. That's what you want, ideally. Forget this, okay, we're going to take a secret ballot here and everybody check a box. Who would you want us to draft on Thursday night? Trey Lance or Mac Jones? Or do you want us to sip chili and you know, at number 20? You know, check a box. We'll count the votes and we'll announce it later. No. You want your general manager to be the guy who trusts himself and has the confidence to go against the grain if necessary. That's the only thing about the Trubisky pick you respected. You're not hearing that now. The rhetoric has changed. I wonder why, but it was rhetoric yesterday that sounded like corporate speak.
Okay. When I think of leadership, there's a quote that comes into my head. It's a very famous quote. It's a very old quote, but the quote is, "I'm not afraid of an army of lions led by a sheep, but I am afraid of an army of sheep led by a lion." And that's from Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great pretty much conquered everything in his universe. He was a very famous person because he basically for 10 years went to war. He also, I believe it was Aristotle that was his teacher up to the age of 16. So that's pretty good learning that he's done. And that's a pretty good quote because you can understand what he's saying. You need to have a leader. You need a lion that brings the sheep with him. You don't need a sheep that's asking the lions for help. It drives me crazy when I hear this idea that, well, we have a consensus. It feels great to come out of the room and everyone's cheering because everyone agrees. That doesn't mean anything. People cheer no matter who you take. If you take someone they don't want, they're still going to cheer because they're all there currying favor. I'm not saying there aren't lions up there. But I know the guy leading him appears to be a sheep. And I don't know if his sheepishness is a result of, you know, kind of once bitten, twice shy. Obviously, he's failed before, so he wants everyone to kind of have a little bit of the responsibility of the pick. We don't need a consensus. We need one guy that is smart enough to figure out who the player is, what it costs, is it worth it, go and get him. That's what you need. You need somebody that has that sort of bravado. You need someone at the top of an organization that can take in everything that's said and then make a decision. You don't need someone that wants you to share a little, you share a little, you share, and then they can say, well, we thought it was the right thing to do. We never understood. I consulted with everyone. It's on you, okay? And when he said that yesterday, when he talked about that, that's always followed by, but it's at the end, I'm the guy that has to make the call. And that wasn't there. It was all about just getting everyone to cheer along with you. I wonder what happened. I wonder how you became a sheep and if it was the previous experience. But that really bothered me. It was corporate speak and it made no sense.
Yeah, and what's really interesting is, do we think that potentially the Mitch Trubisky pick, if he really kept it that close to the vest and he was the only one, did he get neutered because of that? Is that why we've gotten to the point that it's a consensus and more people need to be involved because he fumbled and bumbled that one as badly as he did? Is that a possibility? But, you know, Mully, you and I were talking about this offline, if you want to call it that, yesterday. And who are, you know, the follow-up, and I'm not blaming the media. It's hard with the Zoom. But I would have liked to follow up. Well, who can you tell us who's in the room? Who are the 10 people that are going to be in the room so that are going to have the biggest impact on their voice being heard when this pick is made in a consensus-type thing? And right, David, it is a bunch of corporate gobbledygook to say, oh, we're all going to get together and we're going to hold hands and we're going to make this pick together. You can't do that. This is the NFL that's different. You can say all that, but then at the end you have to stamp it with. But at the end of the day, when we send the pick to the commissioner or whoever you send it to technically, my name is on it. Ryan Pace is the final decision maker. I'm open to listening, but when the pick has to go down and it has to be made, Ryan Pace makes that pick. And that's what we didn't hear, and I think that's what we wanted to hear. But I think what we really want to hear, especially depending on how this draft goes, is somebody else is making that pick this time next year.
I guess the question that we ask is,
were you amused or horrified to see the Pioneer League, an independent league designated as an MLB partner, has decided to forego extra innings and replace them with, wait for it, sudden death home run derbies? Is that any worse than a man on second and Garrett Crochet pitching?
Crochet out of it, for God's sake. He can field his position. He's giving up nothing but infield hits. No one can lay a bat on him. It's just he's been in the wrong spot. Okay, the Pioneer League, apparently the idea is you pick a hitter, the guy goes up there, and he gets five pitches, and see what kind of damage he can do, and then the other team has their best hitter, and he goes up there, and you play home run derby. I got to tell you, to me, it makes about as much sense as having a guy on second, all right? Let's have a free throw shooting contest to decide a game. Let's have a, you know, penalty kicks in the World Cup. I mean, that's effectively what you're looking for here. If you want to do it that way, it makes about as much sense as starting with a guy on second and watching the White Sox lose as a result. So, no, I'm not for this, but I'm not for the other thing. I think they got to figure out a way. Maybe wait till the 11th inning. I don't know. But you got to do something. I'm amused that this is the idea that they've come up with, but I'm horrified that they would go to something like that.
Yeah, more amusing than horrifying, I suppose. The hockey example is always the one you see trotted out as a comparison because of the shootouts. I love watching the shootouts, but it's only after you have seen, you know, 5 minutes of overtime. You've had both teams get a pretty fair chance to win the game in extra time, and that's what's maybe missing from this example. If you, after 10 innings or 11 innings, you want to have a home run derby to decide it, maybe that's one way to keep things interesting. I'll tell you this, from a strictly box office standpoint, I don't know that anyone would leave. I don't know that you stop watching during a home run derby. I mean, who turns off a shootout? I mean, if you're a hockey fan or not. I mean, it's only, you know, it's the part of the game my wife watches the most. I mean, oh, it's a shootout. Okay, you know, she doesn't get off out of her chair. I mean, because the casual sports fan is sort of intrigued by this idea. So maybe a home run derby would accomplish that, but it's gimmicky. It's not a good direction, I think, for the sport to go in. And what the heck does Garrett Crochet have to do with any of this? Talk about psychological scarring.
I'm all for fresh ideas. I'm all for something different, something new. I do think baseball needs a little bit of help, a little kickstart, if you will. I definitely like to see it put in motion in the Pioneer League, and then let's circle back and revisit it. Let's see how it works. Let's see how it goes down. I agree with you, David. I am a big fan of the shootout because you can't have ties. You have to have a winner and a loser in all sporting events. And this is no disrespect to one of Mully's favorite games, but I just don't believe you can put the time and effort into watching a sport and each team walk away. Oh, okay, great. Thanks. Okay, see you again next time. Bye-bye.
312-644-6767. That's the telephone number. Mully and Haw on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.